Okay.
Could you please tell us your name, what branch of the service you were in, and what years you were in, and your rank?
My name is James Abide, and I was in the Navy in World War II, going in the Army of Utica, New York. And from there we went to Sampson Naval Training Station, and I think the training was like 12 weeks or so, and we were training to be torpedo men. And after that we...
Okay, so in February of 1943, you were sworn in at the Navy in Utica, like you said, and you entered boot camp in March of that year at Sampson Naval Training. Is at the east side of Seneca Lake in Geneva, New York. You commenced your 7-day boot leave and had a very enjoyable time at home. Do you remember what that was like when you first got out of boot camp?
Oh, yes. It's always nice to be home.
Well, in May, your leave expired and you returned to Sampson in the outgoing unit for 2 weeks waiting to be assigned. In May of that year, you left Sampson for torpedo school in Newport, Rhode Island, and you arrived in Rhode Island at night from a railroad trip from New York City. Do you remember what the lampposts were like in New York City then?
Well, New York City was as blacked out as it could be. All of the street lights were changed to be shining straight down, and because there was some thoughts that German submarines were off just offshore. Nobody ever found out for sure if they were or weren't, but they were careful to shield the light from the ocean side. But it was a kind of a crazy night on the train. Everything was dark. And we got there safely, and that's all that matters, I guess.
And now it's June, and you started school that would last for 16 weeks. In September, you finished school, and you were rated torpedo man, third class. Is that true?
That's correct.
And you prepared to leave. You were sent to advanced school in Keyport, Washington.
How do you like that one? Go all the way across the country to another torpedo school.
Only in the United States, huh?
Right. And they didn't fly you. Then they put you on a train.
Now, that lasted for 16 weeks. But on October 10th, you had your 19th birthday, and it was the first one away from home.
Right.
How did you feel?
Well, I kind of felt a little lonely. Because you weren't anywhere near home. You know, you couldn't go home and talk to anybody you knew.
Well, that Thanksgiving, though, you were one away from home. It was the first, you just one away from home, but you had a wonderful dinner.
Right.
In December 15th, you were allowed to choose what type of duty we would like after school, and you chose a destroyer on the East Coast, if possible.
That's strange. I also volunteered for submarines, and... And they give you a test to see if you could stand being under the ocean for a period of time. And I guess I didn't pass that test for some reason, so I never got that. So they asked you what your next choice was, and then I chose destroyers.
So now it's Christmas in the Navy, and it's the first one away from home. You said it was pretty lonely for you. In December, you were informed that you had been assigned to the USS Laffey DD-724 and would go to Boston, Massachusetts?
That's where we went, yeah.
That
was really not where we were supposed to go, but they ended up going there.
I said here that you left Seattle for Boston on December 29th and had Pullman all the way. You spent New Year's Eve aboard a train and fell a bit tipsy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the shore patrol when you pulled into the station, they would bang the bottom of your leg where you might hide bottles, and some of them broke.
Now it's January 2nd, 1944. You arrived in Boston to find mistaken orders. Remained in Fargo Building 2 days before you left for Bath, Maine, where the ship was nearing completion. Spent a month in Bath, and you might...
Well, the Fargo Building, just to elaborate a little bit, was like a hotel for Navy or Marines that were getting ready to go to another station. In other words, in my case, I was going up to Bath, Maine from there. So I stayed in the Fargo Building a couple of nights, I guess, and then went up.
And now it's February 8th. Your ship left Bath and Boston to be commissioned. Ship went into commission, and your mom and dad and sister Fanny were there. You spent 10 days in Boston Navy Yard and then left for Washington, D.C. You arrived in Washington, which is quite a stir. Apparently they hadn't seen a ship that size, huh?
Nothing that big went up the Potomac that far, you know.
Tell me about what happened when you got in a fight with a Marine in a bar in Washington.
Well, I didn't really get to the fight, but we had words, and he decided he better not go any further than he did.
Well, that's good for him, right?
Right.
February 24th, you had 1 year in the Navy. You left Washington on a shakedown cruise. And where were you then?
Going down the Bermuda area.
A shakedown. Tell us what a shakedown means.
Well, a shakedown cruise is specifically geared towards having the ship, all of the systems on the ship, used to see if they work properly. And that's what you do on a shakedown cruise.
You arrived in Bermuda on February 26th and spent the following 35 days there in training. You had Liberty there twice and shore patrol a couple times.
I was with one of the officers on our ship. We went ashore and we were on shore patrol, but we didn't do anything, you know. Just made sure the drunken guys didn't cause a problem.
March 30th, you left Bermuda for Boston Navy Yard, and you arrived in Boston on April 2nd, remained there for a period of 35 days.
Yeah, they made some changes there because of the shakedown cruise. That's when you exercise your systems and so they work properly. So they had they put it in the Boston Navy Yard, and they did the changes, and then we went from there.
Well, you got a 12-hour pass, went home, and smashed up your dad's car.
Yeah, went in a ditch.
May 6th, you left Boston for Norfolk, received a telegram from home that you were needed. What would happen?
It was related to the accident. Oh. It wasn't with another car. I just went in a ditch.
And you arrived at home on May 9th, was there for 16 and a half hours on a train. You had a 4-day extension, and you went to New London, Connecticut, received another wire telling you to report to 33rd Street Pier in South Brooklyn, New York. I guess you were kind of late, but they said that was okay?
Yeah. Considering the circumstances, because they knew they were going to be leaving pretty quick.
And that night you went to Red's home for dinner, and later you guys went out?
Who was that? Duarte and Red?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, they got transferred off the ship before it went anywhere else.
So they never...
I never saw Red again, but I saw Duarte. He stopped here in this house to see me once.
So they never experienced D-Day because they left before then?
No.
On Mother's Day, May 14th, you left New York City with a convoy for Scotland, arriving there 13 days later.
Yeah, Greenock.
You refueled there and convoyed 13 troop transport to Portsmouth, England, then went to Portsmouth to wait to the coming invasion. You had Liberty there, but you didn't go. On the 4th, you left Portsmouth convoying 135 landing craft. The dawn of June 5th found the channel too rough for the invasion, so you waited 24 hours and you were held up at Portsmouth, England that night?
It was a storm in the channel that night. Actually, it was a pretty bad storm, actually. And I know I was standing watch above the one place above the bottom deck of the ship, main deck. And so it was one story above that. And the flying fish almost hit me in the face.
Now it's D-Day, June 6th, the invasion of France. A few days later, you were given a chance to howl. You expended 1,035 rounds of five-inch
man, yep.
Bombarding troop concentrations and replacements and such. The following days were spent patrolling a part of an outer defense ring, protecting the beachhead and supplying ships. You moved into the inner defense ring for a while and then went back to Portsmouth. You had gone shore duty patrol there. After a few days, you were informed that you're ready to get away and destination unknown. But tell us about your experience in D-Day. What do you remember?
Well, D-Day was, like I say, it was rough. The channel was rough, and the bombers that were going inland, I mean, the whole sky was just full of airplanes. You were bombers. You couldn't, even the ship vibrated from the sound of the engines, you know. And it was a hard thing for the pilots too, because they had to try and find where the Germans were so they could bomb them when they wouldn't come and reinforce the ones on the ocean, near the ocean. And I remember there was a church steeple just off the beach, actually, in a little town there, and that we had our gunnery officer went ashore with the army guys and told us where to shoot and where we'd do the most effective damage to the Germans at that time. But I remember later going to the beaches at Normandy when I was, you know, long after the war, and that church still has like a dummy paratrooper hanging from the bell tower. And that's where, I don't know if you remember the movie Red Buttons was in it. The Longest Day was the name of the movie.
I remember that.
And that's the village that I visited there. So it was very interesting and exciting, actually.
What did it feel like to go back there many, many years later? What did it feel like to go back there many, many years later?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy a little bit, yeah. Well, I'm sure the guys who scaled the cliffs and everything, it was harder for them because now they had, what happened was that the storm pushed the invasion craft down the beach further than they wanted to go, and they had to climb the cliffs to get over the top. And then beyond that was beaches that were, they had code names, Sword, Juno, this is where the Canadians and the English landed. So it was a...
Which beach was your destroyer in?
We were at Utah Beach. Omaha took the biggest beating, though. Omaha Beach. And then we got involved with going into the port of Cherbourg and diverting the fire I think they were 155-millimeter cannons, and so we were successful in diverting the fire and actually knocking them out of business too. And then after that, we went back. Skipper said they were on our way to Ireland, Belfast, and. And the skipper said, we're going to make a trip on the other side of Cherbourg and do some more shelling. And then he chuckled and he said, "No, I'm just kidding you."
Oh, jeez. He's so a funny guy, huh?
So we went to Belfast, and that's where he reported to the Admiral, and we got our orders to go back to Boston.
So now it's July 9th, and you go back to Boston. You commenced on a 10-day leave and enjoyed it. After your leave expired, you settled down to some good liberty in Boston.
Yep.
Now, when you left Boston, you went to Norfolk. The next day, you went to North Beach, Maryland.
Yep.
Where you had some liberty there.
Yeah, that was in peacetime, that was a place where they had, rides that the kids go on. North Beach was a resort area in peacetime.
Now, August of that year, you underwent to go to Panama Canal Zone, and you escorted the LDS down there. You took 5 days to get there.
Right.
In September at 1500, you started down the locks and went to the canal. You said it was a pretty interesting time.
Yeah, you're going through fresh water there. It's not seawater. Because you got locks at the Pacific end as well as the Atlantic end that you have to go through yourself.
Well, on September 2nd, you had a fight with a guy by the name of Rich, who was a BM-3.
Yeah, gunner's mate, third class, yeah.
He was drunk and called you a few names and insisted on asking you to do something about it, and you agreed. You went back and convinced him that he had bitten off more than he could chew?
Well, it was, we were in the chow line, and he kept going, pushing the little guys out of the way and going to the head of the line. And I told him, knock it off, you know, everybody's waiting, we're all hungry. And he said, well, you want to do something? I said, yeah, let's go back on a fantail and we'll do it. And I went back there, and I know all the officers up on the bridge were watching us fight down there. And he had me bent over this, it's a cable that you hold on to if the sea is rough, and so you don't get washed over the side. And he got me bent back, and I gave him a punch in the mouth, and he let go. And so the next time I saw him, he was telling this kid to squirt the water on the K-guns. Those that would throw the depth charges out. And I told the kid, don't do that. I said, you're getting water all over the mechanism. It won't work right. He said, well, Rich said to do it. I said, you tell Rich that we're not going to do it. I see him talking to Rich, and then he came back. He left Rich, and he didn't do anything. He didn't put any more water on there.
Well, even though the guy apologized the next day, you said you didn't really trust him. You went underway to San Diego that night. You entered the port of San Diego on September 10th for some repairs, I think.
Yeah, it was a few things that needed to be fixed.
And it said that you got liberty that night and went out and got drunk. Then you went to a dance where Ted Lewis and his band was playing.
Yeah, that was you remember Ted Lewis?
No.
He was a famous band leader. Big, you know, in the old days.
And the swing bands kind
yeah,
of?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
So I went to where he was playing just so I could hear him, you know.
And he was good?
Oh, very good, yeah.
Now, September 18th, you arrived at Pearl Harbor. The next day, you looked up Chick Joseph and found him.
Yeah, Chick was one of my best friends from Clark Mills.
And you said you hadn't seen him in a year. You went looking for your brother, Maul, and found him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first time you'd seen him in 2 years?
Yeah. Chick was, he worked at the submarine base there in Pearl Harbor. And, but he wasn't in Pearl Harbor when Japanese attacked it. He wasn't in the service yet.
Oh. When you left for Pearl Harbor, where did you go after that? You left Pearl Harbor in October?
Well, we were heading for a place that would take us below the date line, the international date line, and so we could go through this ceremony of crossing the date line. And then we got change of orders. on the way there, and they sent us to the Philippines, the Lady Gulf.
Why did they send you there?
Because there was going to be a big battle there, shaping up. The Battle of Lady Gulf was a big naval battle, which we were a part of.
Well, you supported in December the landing of the 77th Army Division?
Yeah, that was in Ormoc Bay. Yeah, that's all part of Lady Gulf in that area. The lower part of Luzon, in the northern end of Luzon, is another place where we got to see, we saw some kamikazes for the first time, but they were going after the battleships and carriers to hit where the captain might be, or because they knew admirals would be on those big ships. Mm-hmm. And on a ship like ours, it would be just normally a lieutenant commander or something like that. And we had a good time. I was on duty one night when, in the morning, Mr. MacArthur returned. He said, "I shall return," and he returned with, I don't know, 20 guys with Tommy guns escorting him in the surf, you know.
Now, where was that? You said
that was in Luzon, really. It's the upper part of the island. And right after that is, and right in that area, a couple of kamikazes hit the big ships, you know. They didn't bother with the destroyers.
But you saw them?
Oh, yeah. And we had a storm that night, too. It was a hell of a... come in from the South China Sea. It blew in, and we lost a couple of destroyers. They weren't in our division, but they were told that when you're in that kind of a situation, you got to keep your empty fuel tanks have to have seawater pumped into them to stabilize them so they don't roll right over. A couple of them forgot to do that, and they rolled over, and they were, all hands drowned. They were gone.
In February, it says here that they were underway to bomb Tokyo and other big cities. The first bombing of Japan by naval carrier base planes, we could expect anything. It was the biggest collection of naval night in the history of naval warfare.
Yeah, well, when you talk about bombing, we were escorting the carriers, and they were going up there to bomb it, and they would be the first carrier-based planes that ever did it. The ones that did it before that, Jimmy Doolittle, they were bombers that took off from carriers way out to sea and never expected to land again on the carrier because they couldn't. They could take off. They practiced taking off, but they couldn't land on one. It wasn't big enough.
Oh, dear.
So that's why they continued into China and dumped their planes in China instead. So that was exciting for Doolittle guys, but the ones that went up after that were on a carrier, and then later when the A-bomb was dropped, the B-29s took off from Saipan and Guam.
You were going to in support on the 18th of February Iwo Jima, the invasion that was going to come on the 19th. Tell us about Iwo Jima.
Well, that was a kind of a strange place. There was a lot of sand dunes down on the beach that were different colors based on where they came from. You know, like some were red and some were dark black, but it was still sand. And the guys, we supported the guys who landed by firing at the, but you couldn't see those guys. They were in caves. The Japs were inside of caves with their guns, shooting down on our guys, and our guys couldn't see up into the cave. So even the ships couldn't help much, you know. So we ended up doing the best we could to help out, and support them, and then we got sent over to Guam and got orders to give the Admiral the pictures that were taken at up in Tokyo Bay when the guys were had gone in there and bombed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And now they were going to take the B-29s and take off from there and then go drop the A-bomb.
So when you went to Guam, you delivered the pictures like you just talked about, and you went to the USS Coonty, is that what it is? C-O-O-N-T-Y? For transportation back to the United States, where you had a 30-day leave.
Oh, that was a hospital ship.
Oh.
The guys that were wounded and were going home to a hospital. We stopped in Hawaii and then we landed in San Francisco.
And then you went to Oakland and went for home on April 11th at 0717. You hit Utica. Mom, Dad, Sis, and Sidge were waiting for you at the station, and it was heaven to be home again with Sidge after 2.5 years. And you spent 30 wonderful days at home, and you got the news that your best friend was killed in action east of the Rhine. You said Tony was like a brother to me. It's awful hard to believe.
Yeah. He's a little shit, but he was a paratrooper. He got killed jumping the Rhine, and right about where Germany, Holland, and Belgium come together. And it was tough to lose a guy like that. I don't know how the hell he ever got in. Because I know they have minimum heights and maximum heights, and I don't know, he couldn't make the minimum one, I wouldn't think. I don't think he was more than 5'2" or something like that.
Well, after that, you had to leave Utica and go to San Diego. You had a 12-hour layover in Chicago and had a swell time there. Tell us about that.
Chicago?
Yeah. You must have had such a swell time you don't remember, huh? you reported in San Diego for school. Now, what kind of school are you in now?
Well, the war wasn't over yet.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, geez, they're going to send me out on another ship. So I'll volunteer for PT boats, mm-hmm. which I did, and they sent me there for some more training, you know. That's when it was a Sunday, I was laying in my sack and I heard the word USS Laffey in Okinawa, and that's where they got hit with bombs and, a whole bunch of kamikazes that got them that day. Not just them, but a whole bunch of them got a lot of destroyers. They're on what they call picket duty. You're way out away from the island, so you can give them warning if somebody's coming in.
Now, your friend Darryl was still on the Laffey at that time,
yeah,
wasn't he?
Yeah, Darryl was still on it. He survived. There was another guy called Fry, his last name, F-R-O-Y. I think he was from somewhere near Chicago. And we used to call him Low and Lonely. Fry. And every time we'd pull a trick on him, we'd tell him there's a plane coming in, and he was down in that back area where I was too. And he'd go shooting up that ladder and he'd bang his head on the, oh God, we shouldn't have done that, but.
Well, you got the news that Darryl Fry Johnson and another guy.
Yeah, Johnson was from Pennsylvania.
They were okay, and you were grateful that God spared your buddies.
Yeah.
And you saw that night you saw a guy by the name of Joe, a fellow from your hometown, who played ball for Hollywood. It was
Joe Mashazik.
Yeah.
Yeah, he played. I think it was like the Rochester category of baseball, you know. Mm-hmm. And he was playing for Hollywood out there. He played in San Diego, so I went out to there and watched him play, and he knew I was there, so he come over later, and he got pulled, and they put somebody else in, and he sat with me, and we watched the rest of the game.
Well, you went to the USN hospital and visited your cousin George Esper.
Yeah.
He was a Marine. He got wounded in Saipan.
Yeah, he was a Marine, and I don't know where he got wounded. Maybe in Okinawa. Who the hell knows? He was part of that Esper family that lived in Clark Mills near Gene and Teddy, up that road.
No, you had your tonsils out in June.
Hmm?
You had your tonsils out?
Yeah. I don't know why they did that, but they did that because of, I had volunteered for something that you had to have a clean bill of health.
Well, on July 2nd, the doc okayed you for PT duty. Now you said I must sweat it out and wait to find out if I get it or not. What happened?
Nothing.
Did you get it?
I didn't get it.
Why?
Oh, I think the war ended then. Or Cold Stewart, anyway.
So where were you when you heard the news that the war ended?
I was back in Boston again, in the Fargo building. I was in a theater, actually. I went to a movie, and I come out of the movie in the street with this madhouse. Everybody's kissing everybody, and the war's over. But it wasn't over. It was over in Germany, but it wasn't over in Japan yet. So we still had that to wait out, but then it wasn't much longer, and that was over. Yeah, that's it.
Well, what do you think is the most important thing that you felt after World War II?
Let's not do it again.
Thank you.
You're welcome. A quick resume of what we got here. It's a World War II medal. This one is from the French government for the supporting invasion of France. And this one is from the state of New York. And this is the medal that represents the Asiatic Pacific campaign. And up on the right on top is the European, African, and Mediterranean invasions. And this is the American campaign, which would be anywhere along the coast, the east coast of the United States. And that's the Medal for Merit from the state of New York.
Well, it doesn't matter. You got a lot of them. Now, this is a Navy log.
This one is the combat action ribbon. You don't get a medal for that. You just get a ribbon.
Okay.
That's that one right there.
And that's what you look like during World War II. What a handsome guy.
Mm.
And over here is a Laffy. That's what the ship looked like.
It's an artist's rendition of the USS Laffy called in Harm's Way, and that's off of the coast of Okinawa on picket duty. That's where it got killed. 61 guys got killed that day. And most of the damage was done from here back. And right about where you see that big flash, it's where your father was. So he was happy to get the hell out of there.
I bet you were.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go in here and look at the Laffy tour here.
Well, that's the cruise of the Laffy. You can call it that.
War cruise of the USS Laffy DD-724.
And it's it shows it with the map, and the two pictures on the right are in Seattle when I come back from Okinawa to get repaired. And that was just, from the looks of it, that was out in the Pacific somewhere. probably around Lady Gulf.
Okay.
South?
Hard for me to even read it. Another world war, I would be reborn so that I could be in it. I wouldn't want it to happen, but you never know. And one example I can give you of what happened to me was in Lady Gulf, we had a kamikaze that hit a ship in the head, and the hot engine went right down into the below deck, so they lost all power, and they had to be towed in. So they sent us over there to get a line to them, and the line being a cable, not a piece of rope, and to pull them into safety in the harbor. And we proceeded to do that, and it was so dark out that night that I couldn't even see my hand in front of my face several inches away. And once we got them into safety, some of the survivors who got burned from the kamikaze's fuel that erupted had to come in and be taken care of by the doctor and the pharmacist mates. And so one of them wanted to urinate, and just his hands were burned so badly he couldn't even hold on to his penis. So I held his penis for him till he urinated, and then got him out of there and over to the doctor. That was one thing that kind of stuck in my mind over the years.
What year was that?
That was, he would ask that.
I'm a trick question here.
Probably 44.
Okay.
1944 in Lady Gulf, actually. And we talked about the typhoon also, I think, that it came in. And they, the smaller ships had orders not to ever let their fuel tanks get empty, and if they did, to pump seawater in there for ballast. And a couple of destroyers during that typhoon didn't follow those directions, and the things just rolled right over, and everybody on it drowned.
Oh my God.
And so that's about it. All I can tell you.
That's the end?
You just heard from my father, James Keeter Bond. It's almost his 83rd birthday, and I wanted him to document his experience in World War II. One of the things that really stand out in my mind was the 60th anniversary of the invasion of Normandy, or D-Day. That was June 6, 2004. My father came over to my house, and we looked at this picture. This is a picture of his best friend, Tony Moda, who died March 24, 1944. He was in the Air Force and was shot down in a plane over the Rhine River. 60 years later, my father looked at this picture and began to cry over the loss of his best friend. I guess that's one of the reasons I'm old. 60 years later, he was able to cry. Thank you.